Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Questo suono dal Sud America fino giù in Senegal, profumo d'Africa nella Nuova Guinea, la sentirai in Albania che assomiglia a casa mia, riparte dal Belgio, arriva in Croazia, Slovacchia, Polonia e Romania.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Forza Napoli Worldwide Series. This is a series all about our fans. I'm convinced that we have the best fans in the world, so I wanted to give our fans all over the world a platform where they can tell their stories, and together we can continue to grow this amazing community. I'm your host, Joe Fischetti. Thank you, as always, for listening. Apologies if my voice sounds a little bit funny. I've been under the weather for a few days, which is also why we didn't do a preview episode for the Genoa match, but as a result, we now have a Substack page. So I'll use that to post some written content every now and then if you want to check it out. Anyhow, we're heading back to the UK for today's episode. Today's guest is a former counselor in the UK, Ashley Pierce. Welcome to Forza Napoli.
Hello, thanks for having me on. It's been a while to get a time sorted, so glad I can finally talk.
Yeah, exactly. We've been going back and forth for a little while, but that's okay. We finally connected, and that's the most important thing. So we're going to talk all about Napoli's 3-0 win over Genoa on Sunday, which, of course, was Lorenzo Insigne's final match at the Maradona. As always, we always start these episodes with our guest story. So, Ashley, how did you become a Napoli fan?
So, growing up in England, Diego Maradona doesn't have the greatest of names in England for sort of obvious reasons from 1986, you know. So, growing up, the first World Cup I really remember was 1994, so I was about 10 years old. And sort of, you know, in the build-up to that, Maradona was coming back to the Argentina squad after sort of, you know, his hiatus after leaving Napoli. And I was a kid, like many others, very interested in football, so I immersed myself in reading and looking at all the greats and things. And I just noticed that everyone in England hated this guy. But, you know, I completely understand sort of why from what happened in 1986. But, I, you know, from all the videos I could cobble together, and I just thought, wow, this, and still do, you know, wow, this guy's amazing, what he can do with the ball. And, you know, I'd watch videos over and over again. I'd get as much footage as I can. There'd be sort of documentaries occasionally on English television, and I'd sort of record them and rewatch them and lap them up. And then obviously you start reading around, and his biography by Jimmy Burns, you know, fantastic book, one of the sort of first books I think I ever read from cover to cover. And at that time in England, which, you know, any of our English listeners, I'm sure, will remember, we had Italian football was on Channel 4. And if you didn't have satellite TV, which I didn't, then it was actually the only live game you could watch every weekend. So I sort of started to then check out Napoli's results on that. Sadly, you know, at that time, we weren't doing so well. So it inevitably be Milan and Juventus on the live game on Sunday. But you'd get to see some highlights and bits and then sort of cobbled together. Sadly, Channel 4 then stopped showing it. And it sort of disappeared off British TV screens for about 10 years, I think, maybe more. So there was sort of this wilderness period where you couldn't really watch it. We did still have a sort of a magazine called Football Italia where you could check, and obviously pre-internet days, I remember looking at this magazine when I think it was when Napoli got promoted from Serie C. And you know, you had to, it sounds so odd now, but there wasn't a way of looking. If you're for England, you couldn't buy Gazzetta dello Sport or something. So you just had to wait for this magazine to come out to see if your team had been promoted about 3 weeks ago. It's very, very odd. But and then really about Italian football came back onto sort of British screens, I think about 2010. So around about then, really started to get back into it. And then the Lavezzi, Hamsik, Cavani era was the first time that I was sort of really watching as much as I could. I was just after two of those had gone. I was lucky enough to go over in 2013 to watch a game against Torino. So that's the only time I've been there. Anytime Napoli have been in England and I can watch, I've seen them in the Europa League or UEFA Cup, whichever one it was, at Swansea. I've seen them in the Champions League at Arsenal. And now every Napoli game, one of the conversations I had with you recently, we've got this very odd rule in England that you can't show games at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, whatever they are. So apart from the two previous games to Sundays, which kicked off at two, I think, our time, so British TV didn't show them, pretty much every game, every weekend, that's the sort of one game I'll watch. And I'm from Reading. I sort of support my hometown team. But I think in the last 3, 4, 5 years, Napoli have sort of replaced them far more in my... I've always sort of taken an eye on Napoli, but now they've sort of taken place of Reading in sort of my affections. To my three-year-old children now will point to my shirts and go, "Daddy, Napoli," rather than anything else, which is really good. So if I ask them what football team Daddy supports, they'll say Napoli rather than anything else. So, the last few years, it's been, I'm sure we might touch on these bits. There's been some disappointments, but actually, if you look at the history of the club, it's been some incredible moments and, actually an incredibly sort of high point for the club in their history in the last sort of 5 years when I've really been supporting them. So I feel quite lucky for that.
Yeah, it's funny. I was thinking about this the other day because obviously this season has been disappointing for a lot of us in that it was a big missed opportunity to win the Scudetto. But given this match against Genoa, I saw people commenting today and over the weekend about how Napoli and Genoa were promoted together. I don't know if it was from Serie C to Serie B or from Serie B to Serie A. And you look back at that, it just gave me a good bit of perspective because we're sitting here complaining that we didn't win the Scudetto. And as a result of this loss, Genoa have been relegated. You look at where the clubs have gone over the same 15-year period. I think that's something that made me feel a little bit better about the way this season has gone. I was smiling the whole time. People obviously can't see me, but I was smiling the whole time you told that story because I think it's amusing that, an Englishman who supports Napoli because of Maradona, when obviously, there are a lot of Englishmen who probably despise Maradona and the club to this day, obviously for what happened in that World Cup match in 86. But yeah, I think it's a fantastic story. And I also love that, your kids are now identifying your favorite club as Napoli over Reading. I imagine that's something that's probably unique for an English football fan, that their favorite club is a club that's not English, first of all, and certainly not from their hometown.
Yeah, I presume so. One of my friends was kind enough to buy them two little Napoli shirts when they're very young. So they've both got Napoli shirts, and they recognise that they particularly like the we've had about 40 kits the last couple of years, but the spider web one. My son especially is obsessed with Spider-Man, so he particularly likes the spider web Napoli shirt and just goes spider web. So and what you said a minute, I think I listen to the pod every week, and I completely get where some people are coming from in the frustration, and that's the thing, it is frustration. But you've said a couple of times in the last couple of pods that if we hadn't have won those first 8 games of the season, this would have been seen as such a successful season. And it's not just that we've qualified for the Champions League, actually. I think there's two other things for it. It's finishing ahead of Juventus, which is always a bonus. And actually, it's finishing third, which takes out one of the layers. You know, the fourth team still have to go through a bit of qualifying. So, yeah, that if we sat down before the start of the season, we would have all taken this. Those first eight games sort of skewed us, and I completely get why. I was like everyone else, you know, sort of thought this could be our year and the other teams being slightly weaker. But I think if you take a step back, it's been another very successful season.
Yeah, and I think most of our fans will come to that point as well. It may take some of us a little bit longer than others to get over that heartbreak of not winning. But I think we all will come to that realization, and certainly we won't lose any fans, I don't think, as a result of how this season has gone. All right, so that'll do for part one. In part two, we'll talk about all the tributes to Lorenzo Insigne.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to part two of the Forza Napoli podcast. All right, so let's get to the game. As I mentioned, we won 3-0. We got goals from Victor Osimhen, Lorenzo Insigne, and Stanislav Lobotka. But really, the result itself was more of an afterthought. This day was all about Lorenzo Insigne. Depending on the platform you use, you may or may not have seen the opening ceremonies. I know for those listeners in Canada where I'm from, if you're watching on Fubo, you didn't really get to see a whole lot of that. I happened to watch on DAZN as well, so I got to see it there. Did you happen to catch the opening ceremony, Ashley?
Yes, probably similar to the one in Canada. The coverage started right on kickoff. They did show a little bit of it at halftime, so we did get to see sort of some of it, but not live. So the commentators on BT Sport in England were pretty good at relaying what Insigne had said in his speech. So it wasn't a particularly long speech, but so the commentator did relay the whole speech. So yeah, we got to see it at halftime.
Okay, so let me fill you in and maybe some of the other listeners who didn't get to watch it on some of the festivities, because there was quite a bit. The speech was part of it, but if you watched on DAZN, the broadcast began with a bit of a montage of Insigne goals, and they kind of overlaid quotes from some of his past coaches and teammates, Paolo Cannavaro, Rafa Benitez, Marek Hamsik, Maurizio Sarri. They all had a few words. Then we saw his teammates allow him to take the field for the warm-up on his own. So normally what happens is they all kind of run out together, and it was nice because they and I imagine the captain kind of leads that run out onto the pitch, and the teammates behind them just kind of faked it, and then they stopped, so he kind of ran out on his own and then realized nobody was behind him, so he had a little bit of a moment on his own there to receive the applause from the crowd. So that was nice. One of the curve unfurled a couple of banners that read, "Your jersey weighed the most of all because it belonged to those who truly loved it. You wore it with flair, pride, and dignity. Be proud, son of this city." So there the ultras were giving him a little bit of a heads up. And they also met with him, I believe, on Saturday, and they gave him a plaque and said some speeches and whatnot. So then there was the formal ceremony where Insigne's teammates made a guard of honor and they greeted him individually. Insigne was followed by De Laurentiis, Struntoli, and Spalletti, and he was greeted by his family at the end of the guard, and the club presented him with three gifts. The first was a jersey that was presented by Ciro Mertens, and at the bottom of the jersey it read 433 appearances that enriched the Azzurri story with generosity and passion. Thank you, captain. The second was presented by Koulibaly and was basically just a big collage of Insigne pictures. And then the third was a giant trophy presented by De Laurentiis and Spalletti, and a few accounts had a laugh at that, including the ESPN official football page. They kind of joked that, amongst others, they weren't the only ones, but they kind of joked that the trophy was as big as Insigne himself, which I have to say was pretty funny, even if it was maybe a little bit rude. And then Insigne gave that speech that you mentioned. I won't read the whole thing, but you can find it online if you want. There's translations out there, and he basically just thanked all of his teammates and the club and the fans and so on. I think Insigne probably shed a couple of tears as he did when he read that speech, as he did throughout the day. So those were the pre-match festivities. Let's move on to the tributes during the match. Actually, it looked like Insignia's teammates were doing everything they could to get him to score. Did you get that same impression watching the match?
Yeah, some of the decision making was, you know, in the final third was pretty completely understandably, you know, if there was anything on the game, you know, for us, I know there was for Genoa, if there's anything on the game, I think that might have been different. But there was an awful lot of trying to find him. And then when, you know, his usual trying to cut him from the left, he actually seemed to do it a lot less than usual yesterday. So especially during the second half, he kept dropping deeper and deeper to get the ball. And, you know, the commentators over here were sort of saying, oh, go on, just cut inside one more time and rifle it in your right foot. But he was sort of on the halfway line at points. It's like that wasn't going to happen. I think in his desperation to get his second goal, he was dropping further and further back. There was a constant sort of trying to find him, which actually I think gets to about the 70th minute. He looked exhausted, I think, emotionally, but also I think he was receiving the ball a lot. You know, this go on, go and do something. So, yeah, I think everyone was desperate to see him get another goal in that case.
Yeah, he nearly scored a tira giro in the first half after he played a little give and go with Mertens, and Mertens did that clever back heel. There was that ridiculous play he made in the first half along the byline where first he touched the ball around Herty and then he played a sombrero over Goldemez, but Sirigu stopped him from a tight angle, and then before the break Mertens set him up again for a volley, but he just missed the target on that one. So he was very involved in the first half, and even after that chance along the byline we saw him trying to fire up the fans. Now I'm curious to know what you think about Insignia's overall play in this match, because I'm of two minds of it. On one hand, I was happy to see him play well in his final match at the Maradona, but on the other hand, I couldn't help but wonder, where was this passion and energy for the rest of the season?
Yeah, to broaden the question slightly, I think Insignia, you know, he deserves all the plaudits he's getting. And for over a decade, he's been brilliant. In certain seasons, he's been magnificent. But we're not losing that Insignia over the course of the season. We're not, you know, all the video highlights that the club has put out, great to see, great memories. But we're not actually losing that Insignia. We're losing the Insignia of this season, which is far more akin to what you said. It's quite a frustrating figure, often quite peripheral. So when we're talking about who might replace him, you know, again, I think the fans probably need to think we're not replacing Insignia of Sarri era. We're replacing this Insignia who's been kind of on the fringes. You know, he scored the one goal from open play at Lazio. Is that it? I think.
I think two now.
Two now. Yeah, oh, and Empoli, I think it was. Yeah, and Empoli. Yeah. So most of them have been from the penalty spot. He still provided assists, but you know, he was always going to, for this game, you know, try and turn it on and show up. But yeah, the frustration of, could you have done that against Spezia at home?
I mean, obviously he was more motivated for this match, but it goes to show that he does still have plenty to give if he's motivated. I think last season was one of his best seasons in his career, and it was under a coach whose strong suit is motivating his players. Mind you, I think De Laurentiis did exactly the opposite of motivating Insignia by dragging out the whole contract negotiation. So his poor season is not entirely on him. And I put some of the blame on Spalletti as well for a couple of reasons. The one thing everyone is frustrated with Spalletti about is that he didn't play Mertens in the 10 until it was too late, at least. And we've seen how well Mertens has linked up with Osimhen and his wingers over the past few matches. And then the other reason I blame Spalletti is because pretty much all of our wingers have had poor seasons, not just Insignia. But yeah, I think you're right. I think he's probably now past his prime, and we shouldn't think of this as losing peak Insignia. It's like you said, we're losing Insignia from this season. Let's move on to his goal in the second half. Perhaps the biggest tribute on the day might have been from match official Michael Fabbri, who allowed Insignia to retake the penalty. What did you think of that whole situation?
I think the sort of funniest bit of that was Di Lorenzo's reaction to, you know, just he kind of wanted to celebrate. He doesn't score very often. And then everyone else just sort of going, do we celebrate? Is this a happy moment? Because Insignia just got in a bit of, not a sulk, but, you know, obviously he was disappointed. So then, you know, then his face lit up, which is bizarre. We've just scored a goal that's been disallowed, essentially, but his face lit up to go, oh, yeah, well, Yeah, they were saying on the British commentary, oh, perhaps there's been a bit of sentimentality there in the VAR room. Whilst I'm not sure that's true. It was encroachment by us. It was Di Lorenzo, wasn't it? So that is a valid reason to chalk it off. But it was just all very, very odd. And actually, we almost felt quite sorry for Di Lorenzo losing a goal and sort of almost being punished for wanting to go to the curva to celebrate. But
yeah, it was a very strange kind of moment. I mean, you know, it was probably one of the rare times that the home crowd will cheer for their own goal being disallowed. But obviously, everyone wanted Insigne to retake that penalty. Had the penalty not been retaken, it would have been his fifth miss from the spot and his second in as many matches. Now, the encroachment thing is a funny one because, I mean, you can probably spot encroachment on every penalty that's taken. So I think that's maybe why it was considered a little generous from the officials. But you're right. I mean, there was. I mean, when they showed the replay, to be honest, I thought Fabian had encroached more than Di Lorenzo because it was kind of hard to see Di Lorenzo on the opposite side where his feet were. But in either case, it was probably fine to retake the penalty. And it actually reminded me a bit of the penalty in the Juve-Inter game, albeit less controversial than in that one. But in that match, Hakan missed the penalty. Inter scored on the rebound, then the penalty was retaken for encroachment. In that case, by the opposing team's player, I think it was Matthijs de Ligt, and then Hakan scored on the second attempt. What was unique about this one was, again, that the crowd cheered for their own goal being disallowed, and then Insigne scored on the retake, which was his 11th goal of the season, as we mentioned, two of them from open play, so that's 9 from the penalty spot. With that goal, he took sole possession of the title of second highest goal scorer in the history of the club. He was tied with Matic Hamsik on 121 goals, and now he's on 122. Insigne was taken off in the 88th minute. I saw quite a few people saying that Spalletti should have allowed Insigne to complete the match. I have my views on this, but I want to hear yours first. Do you think Spalletti was disrespecting Insigne in that situation?
No, I don't know what exactly the sort of culture of it in Italy is as much, but certainly in England, it's quite the done thing and quite common thing to take the player off so they can do one last, sort of get appreciation from the crowd. I know, they did the lap of honour afterwards. In England, they've even done it where I think John Terry got taken off the number of his shirt, whatever that was, after X minutes, it was in the first half. So, no, I actually, the English commentary, they were going on after about an hour, they were saying, any time one of our players warmed up, they were going, oh, is he about to be taken off? So I actually think Spalletti probably gave him longer than certainly would have got in England. And I think longer than, so that he actually, if this game wasn't the game it was, where we didn't have anything on it, he looked really knackered, I think, at points. So after about 70 minutes, I think he the emotion and the fact he kept looking for the ball and they kept looking to give him the ball. Yeah, I think it was fine the way he handled that, actually.
Yeah, I agree. It's actually exactly the same thing in Italy. This was actually another in-game tribute. It was, you're effectively stopping the match to allow the players and the fans to give him an ovation as he's walking off the pitch. And we saw how the staff and his teammates that were not on the pitch kind of all lined up and waited for him to come off so they could greet him. I don't think there was any disrespect there. The final tribute was after the match. You mentioned sort of the lap of honor. That was, I guess, his curtain call there. Once again, the players showed their respect by following, but a good distance behind him, but following him. Of course, the ever oblivious Edo moved himself to the front of the pack that was following Insigne, almost sort of walking side by side with him. And at one point, the fans started tossing their scarves to him, which was a nice little gesture. I actually caught another nice moment watching this on DAZN. After he gave his interview to DAZN, he walked over to his wife, Jenny, who was waiting for him at the dugout, and they had a nice little embrace. But then while they were hugging, Insigne kind of looked up, and then he said something to his wife. I think he said, hang on a sec, I'll be right back, in Italian or Napolitan or however. And then he walks past the dugout, and the camera kind of panned over, and you saw there were some stadium workers there in their orange vests, and I guess they must have had their phones out, or maybe they even called for him. I mean, you couldn't tell, but he went over and took some selfies with them. So I thought that was a nice little gesture. At that point, the stadium had pretty much cleared out. So for those people, they're probably not making a whole lot of money. I think that was a nice little touch for him there. So you couldn't ask for a more perfect day if you were Lorenzo Insigne. Now, it wasn't only Insigne's final match at the Maradona. If you didn't already know, you might not have realized that it was also Fawzi Ghulam's final match at the Maradona. Do you think maybe the club snubbed Ghulam a little bit there?
Yeah, I mean, it was always going to be Insigne's day. I don't know if De Laurentiis was as annoyed because he's on that wage and he couldn't shift him in January. You can put it past him. But yeah, I mean, when he came on, he seemed pretty desperate to get up the pitch and try and get a goal, actually. But, I don't know if privately anywhere in the club they did some kind of leaving for him. I hope so, because he does deserve not the send-off Insigne got, but he certainly deserved something. So I certainly hope at some point, maybe in private or just with the players, that the club did do something for him. So I think, yeah, just to let him walk away is hopefully not what the club's about. You would want some kind of tribute given to him.
Yeah, I agree. I think they could have done something for him. I mean, he may not have been born in Napoli and he wasn't a Napoli youth player. And, the club did basically pay him to do rehab over the last couple of seasons. But, at his peak, he was one of the best left backs in the world. And in every interview I've read with people close to Ghulam, they've always said what a great professional he is and just generally what a great person for him that he is. So, I would have liked to see them do something. It would have been nice even if Insigne did a little bit something, maybe mentioned him in his speech, but he kind of took all the glory for himself on the day, which is fine. We'll see. I mean, there's still one game left. It's an away match, so I'm not sure that they would do something, at Spezia, but like you said, hopefully they do something in private or online or whatever, and I think they probably will. So that will do for part two. In part three, we'll talk about the other two goals and a bit of a curious story about whistles in the stadium.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to part three of the Forza Napoli podcast. So I want to talk about the other goals next, starting with Victor Osimhen's 14th goal of the Serie A campaign. Ashley, what did you make of that goal?
I thought it was a sort of a classic, very well-worked goal. I think up to that point, for the previous sort of 5 or so minutes, we'd just started to get into the game. I think we'd started really slowly. Genoa would hit the bar and actually they were clearly offside, but they were on a couple of goals disallowed. And we hadn't really clicked into gear. And then the 5 minutes just before the goal, we'd started to sort of get a bit of rhythm. And you mentioned earlier that our wingers haven't had great seasons, which I'm not sure any of them have. And it helped to prove how important Di Lorenzo is, not just at the back where, when he was out for those few games, we sort of crumbled a little bit, had such a good defensive record. But, I mean, he wasn't closed down, so he had all the time in the world, but it was a fantastic cross to put that right in the correct area between the two Genoa centre-backs. And then if that kind of cross is delivered 10 times a game, Osimhen will get dozens and dozens of goals each season. So I think that's certainly a route that we need to use more. Better defences might have dealt with it better. But if we can put balls in like that, or if it's from Mario Ruiz, also a fantastic crosser, I think that is a route that we really need to use more. So yeah, that was another great header from Victor. But if he gets that kind of service, he'll be getting north of 20 goals easily next season.
Yeah, absolutely. No one in the league attacks the ball better than Victor does. That was his 7th goal of the season with his head, which is easily the most improved aspect of his game this season. I mentioned it was his 14th goal of the season. He did that in 26 appearances, and 4 of those appearances were only 26 minutes or less, because he got sent off in the opening game of the season against Venezia. Then he had sort of 2 kind of recovery matches when he got back from injury. So if you do the math, Osimhen would have scored around 20 to 25 goals if he didn't miss 11 games due to injury or suspension. And every single one of those goals was scored from open play. We were awarded 14 penalty kicks this season. So if Osimhen didn't get hurt, and if he took the penalties, as he does for Nigeria, he realistically could have scored 30 to 40 goals this season, which is really mind-boggling. You mentioned Giovanni Di Lorenzo. He picked up the assist on the goal. Last episode, I listed off a number of reasons why we didn't win the Scudetto, and injuries was one of them. I'm tempted to make sort of a subcategory of that, because I feel like had we not lost either of Osimhen or Di Lorenzo due to injury, we might still have won the Scudetto despite all of the other injuries. Do you think that's a fair statement?
I actually think there are kind of three crunch points of the season. I still pinpoint one, the last minute away at Inter, the first game we lost, where you know we were 3-1 down, and then Mertens scored a fantastic goal to get back. And then in the last minute, Mertens had a chance, which 9 times out of 10, he would have put in. And I think we'd won our first 8. To go unbeaten in 9, that would have been huge, I think, for their belief, which has always been this team's problem, you know, the belief. If they'd have got that draw, you know, that was one tiny bit. And then obviously the Christmas bit, you know, there was the period just before, you know, the fixture at Christmas where we had those home defeats. And even in those, we were unlucky. But there were periods, you know, that Napoli released the squad list the day before the game. I'd be patiently waiting for it to come up on Twitter. And you think, we've got 13 players left, you know, and then games in England clubs were pulling out of games and the FA let them because they didn't have 20 fit players. We genuinely at points had, with Osimhen fit, we'd have a chance. And we kind of did up to, you know, a couple of those, the third bit being obviously the Empoli game was the one where it really crashed. And that was, but I think by that point, the mentality, the belief then and fully had gone. But yeah, the injury, you know, and even if you take the players that we've lost, their equivalents at Inter or AC, I don't think those two teams do the same either. I know you could argue Zlatan's injured, but that Zlatan, they know, was never really going to be fit for the entire season. I think if you take out the same players that we've had out, you know, different side, I know, but Teo Hernandez's goal yesterday, you could argue he's more important than Di Lorenzo. But if he misses 5 key games, then
you could say Leao as the Osimhen player, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, the injuries and for one of the, you know, it wasn't like the Sarri season where, you know, we all know he only played about 14 players across the season, and people we did have 22, 23 players that were good enough. You know, you could argue the merits of some not being quite good enough, but broadly, I think we had a replacement for every position. A slight dip in quality, obviously, that's to be expected if they get injured. But then we were just so unlucky. And, you know, you can't argue that. Well, you can't start a season with 30 players just in case 10 of them get COVID and injured. So, yeah, and, you know, that adds to the frustration. But hugely unlucky with injuries, I think.
Yeah, and that third bit, which is, you know, the most recent run of matches that we didn't win, Fiorentina, Roma and Empoli, Di Lorenzo didn't play in any of those matches, which is kind of why I wonder, had he not been hurt, would it have been any different? And mostly for what he contributes in the attack. Now, we did score a couple against Fiorentina. We scored, obviously, a couple against Empoli. But our attack was really lacking in the Roma match. That was his 5th assist of the Serie A campaign, his 7th in all competitions. So I just wonder, you know, might he have made the difference in those ones? Who knows? He also won the penalty for the Insigne goal. And as we said, had the penalty not been retaken, he would have scored a goal himself. Let's move on to the final goal of the match, which was scored by Stanislav Lobotka. Actually, that was some run and finish by Lobotka there.
Yeah, fantastic. And I think like many Napoli fans, one of my new favourite players from this season, you know, that we all know he's the most improved player of this season. Even when he came on in this game, you know, Fabian has had a real tail off. There were points where, you know, Fabian had the best passing accuracy, the most goals from outside the box and all those stats. But whether that's because, you know, the motivation for the Scudetto had gone, or, you know, looks like he's out of the club in the summer, but there's certainly been a big drop off. But, you know, one of the things I've really liked about Napoli in the last few years, that generally getting these things right, is that, you know, yep, we're going to have to sign a replacement in terms of the squad. But if you were picking your first 11 now, I'd have Lobotka ahead of Fabian, I think. And if he can add what he did on Sunday, which is obviously what one of Fabian's biggest attributes is, those, you know, brilliant goals he scores from outside the box. But I don't know if they've worked on that in training, but if that's something Lobotka can do, you know, he's so good at receiving the ball from the defence. He's so good at spreading the play. But if he can add driving runs and scoring goals like that, then we've got a hell of a player on our hands and probably Fabian's replacement.
Yeah, that was his first goal in Serie A. And I have to say, I was hoping he would pass the ball to Ghulam because, like you said, Ghulam was trying so desperately to score, but that was the next best thing. And I don't think anyone on this team deserved the goal more than Lobotka did, followed closely probably by Anguissa and maybe Mario Rui. I would say Mario Rui, but some people wouldn't. Lobotka took 8 touches between the pass by Anguissa inside our own half and the shot. And this might sound crazy, but that run was kind of peak Leo Messi, the way he was dribbling at full sprint, especially the 5 touches he made before the shot. It was just touch, 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 and then shot. And, you know, I never thought I would ever compare Stanislav Lobotka to peak Leo Messi, but there you have it. We just did it. So, all right, one last thing before we wrap up the pod, and it's the story about the whistles that I mentioned earlier. Did you see this one going around social media, Ashley?
I've heard a bit of it from you just before, and I'll let you explain before I give my opinion of it.
Absolutely. So for those of you who didn't see this story, there were numerous firsthand reports that while the Curva was chanting against De Laurentiis, whistle sounds suddenly started playing on the stadium speakers. So the suggestion is that someone, which I say with the sort of inverted commas, played these whistling sounds to drown out the chants against De Laurentiis. Now, I did also see firsthand accounts from fans confirming that they were in fact whistling against the chants, so perhaps it was a combination. It certainly wouldn't surprise me if this was done by De Laurentiis and his people. I mean, Italian football owners are a very eccentric group, and frankly, they've done a lot worse than that. But, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's certainly something I could see him doing. I think we all know that is quite possibly. I suppose the logistics of it, he'd have to anticipate that was going to happen to get, you know, tell the people to do it. But again, I'm sure that is something that he would plan for and then tell the stadium announcer to press play on it. Yeah, they're doing it. Press play, cancel it out. So, yeah, like you said, for all his faults, all his merits, whichever sort of camp you're in, he'd certainly very, very ego-led, and he's certainly going to be sensitive to those kind of things. So, yeah, it's just sort of a bit of a sideshow on the big day for Insigne, really.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, there were a few little things that you wonder if De Laurentiis was involved. I mean, one was that, again, that giant trophy, was that kind of done a little bit in jest? You know, there was also our friend Anna sent me this picture of the two of them walking out, because when they walked out for that ceremony, they walked out hand in hand, which is a very European thing, I guess you can say. And the way De Laurentiis was holding Insigne's hand, De Laurentiis' hand was sort of on the top. And it very much looked like kind of a father walking out his little child. So, you know, I don't know if we're maybe overanalyzing a little bit. It's a very interesting photo. Maybe I'll post it online and we can get people's thoughts on that. So, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if this was somehow orchestrated by De Laurentiis. And it just added to what was already a very bizarre news week. The other story that made me scratch my head a little bit was a story reported by La Repubblica about the club having Victor Osimhen's social media passwords. And then, you know, it's almost a non-story. It's like, okay, who cares, right? But then the club felt the need to post, you know, an official statement on this, that they do not have Victor's passwords. Like, of all the things that we need to make statements about, that's the one which was a sort of classic Lombardo move. So yeah, it was definitely a bit of an odd work week. Anyway, you know, unless you had anything else to add, Ashley, I think we can wrap it up there.
No, very pleased to be here. Glad I could talk.
Yeah, it was a pleasure to have you, and I look forward to having you back on some point next season. You can find Ashley on Twitter at AshleyPierce84. You can find me on Twitter at Joe_Fischetti5. And you can find the podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Patreon at Forza Napoli Pod. Be sure to check out our Twitter page for our latest Napolitan song of the week. This week's song is La Mascara Chi Se Vo Bene. I've already featured La Mascara, so I don't have too much to say about the band. I just picked this song because it's my favorite track on their brand new album, which just released last week, so be sure to give that a listen. I'll be back in a few days to review our latest Primavera and Femminile matches. Both of those clubs played their final match of the season, and both were fighting for survival, so there was plenty of drama there. But until next time, I'm Joe Fischetti. Forza Napoli sempre.
Podcast Network. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.